you have not heard Amanda's story, sit back and enjoy, because you are in for a treat. With that, I give you a
second, huh? Wow. A little bit quilt. Good morning, family. My name's Amanda Brown. I'm a grateful alcoholic. By the grace of God, I'm sober today. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction. Woo! Words are one of my love languages, and some of y'all have said such sweet and kind words to me this weekend. So that just touches me. That gets me right here. And that's one of the ways that the God of my experience speaks to me and lets me know that I'm on the right road. So I really do appreciate those kind words. And by the grace of God, I'm sober today. And I just want to let y'all know I'm glad y'all could finally get up and join me, because I've been up since 5:30 waiting on this. Literally. Went to bed last night and went straight to sleep. And so 5:30, I was up. I've already given this talk 3 times this morning. God of my experience has already listed me how he wanted me to get started. I'm like, woo, let's go. So I was down here at 9:45, ready for y'all to come on. Dan was up here. I'm like, look, get him in, let's go. And he wasn't kidding when I said I would start without y'all, because I've been ready to go, you know. Just overwhelmed with gratitude this morning. And I've got some housekeeping things to do. First, I will tell you my sobriety date is May 19th, 1991. I'm very grateful for that. My home group is the Legacies Group in Montgomery, Alabama, where we try to practice all three sides of the triangle. We have noon meetings every day, Monday through Saturday. We have a 6 o'clock Monday night meeting, an 8 o'clock Wednesday night speaker meeting, an 8 o'clock Friday night candlelight meeting. If you're in Montgomery, it's off of Atlanta Highway in the Forest Hill Shopping Center. I do have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I'm privileged to work with men and women in this program. And the first thing I want to do is say thank you, thank you, thank you to the committee, to anybody who had anything to do with me getting here. Thank you so much. What a privilege and an honor. I'm always humbled when the God of my experience sees his way to lay my name on somebody's heart for me to come and speak. I take that responsibility statement very seriously. When anyone anywhere reaches out their help for help, I want my hand to always be there. And this is a wonderful opportunity for me, and I thank you for that. I thank you. I thank you for that. I thank you for the God of my experience allowing the schedule to work out where I could come. My kids start school Wednesday. My husband and my children are down at the beach with my mother and Chip this weekend, so I was so grateful that I was able to come this weekend and be with all of you. It has been an amazing weekend. I want to thank Lori and Maggie and Meredith. I actually had 3 hostesses this weekend, because I'm high maintenance like that, you know. I'm aware today. So thank y'all so much. And I love coming over here. I feel like I'm coming home when I come over here to Atlanta. I have so many friends and family, when I come over here. Thank you so much. Got to attend a noon meeting at 8111 on Friday, where I got to be one of many. And I just love to be able to do that when I come. And, it's just been a wonderful weekend. I'm following instruction here, so please bear with me for just a minute. I want if you volunteered, if you were on the committee, if you're a host or a speaker, I want you to stand up for just a minute, please. Nope, stay standing. Stay standing, because this isn't about thanking you, although I'm glad they're thanking you. I want you to see something. Those of you that are sitting, if you heard something that stuck with you, if something stood out to you, if you heard something that changed you, made you change your perspective, if you heard something that you're going to take back to your meetings at home, I want you to raise your hand, and I want you standing to turn around and look. Turn around and look. Look at all those ripple effects. Thank you so much. Look at all those ripple effects. Look at how God is going to use that and use everybody that was here to spread this message that we've heard this weekend. I love this thing. Age of Miracles still with us. Absolutely. My first sponsor used to say, look around the room, Aunt Amanda, because every single person in here is a miracle. We all know people who need this program. Not everybody gets it. We were chosen to be here. You have a purpose. And I hope that you understand that. I hope that you will take something you've heard back to your home groups this weekend. I hope that you will take how you were changed and use that with your sponsees, however that looks like to you, and let those ripple effects go far and wide. We got to hear this weekend from all of our speakers how each one of us is a miracle. We got to hear about Jim, how God, of his experience, is using him in corrections. And how he got to affect international. Oh, my God. To be a part of something like that. We know Jerry's a miracle because, Lord, he's sitting right here. He shot mange medicine up his arm and he's got a beautiful head of hair. For those of us that were lucky enough to come and hear Isis and Christine yesterday afternoon, my God, what a miracle that young lady Isis is. To have been through so much in her young life, and she's brave enough and have enough courage to stand up here and share how her life has changed through Alateen. Christine got to share how we don't have to be drinking to be crazy. And to be able to recover from that. And what a beautiful light and soul. And I love what she said. She shared about that her life today is only possible because of a relationship with the God of her growing understanding. I loved that. She absolutely is a miracle today. Last night we got to hear about Carl and good grief, what a miracle he is to be drinking on Anabuse. I cannot even imagine. I mean, I was thinking about that last night. I think the closest I ever could come to that or could relate to that is when I would throw up in a glass and I would drink my throw up because it had alcohol in it. Going to any lengths to get what I had to have on a daily basis. I'm supposed to share with you what I was like, what happened, and what my life is like today. But it also talks about in the book that I'm supposed to share how I came to have a relationship with a power greater than myself. And so those of you that have heard my story before, I just want to tell you I have a feeling that today is going to be a little bit different. I'm not sure, but it might be a possibility. God has really been laying some things on my heart this weekend, and I have peed and I have prayed not once, not twice, not three, but four times this morning. And what I do is I do that because I want to be empty. I want to be an empty vessel so the God of my experience can use me to share. After 27 years of sobriety, there's a lot of different experiences. There's a lot of things that I've done. There's a lot of things that I've been through. And I never know what the God of my experience wants to pull out from that. And I pray that if you're in this room and you're new, I want you to hear the hope. I want you to hear the hope. I encourage you to listen for the similarities, not the differences, because even though some of our details may be different, even though we may not have all been raised the same way, we may not have gone through all the same thing, you will certainly, I do, be able to identify with the feelings. With the feelings. I'm a grateful alcoholic this morning. My sponsor taught me how to be a grateful alcoholic. She had me make gratitude lists all the time, and God, I used to hate to write a gratitude list. She had to train me in that way. She said, Amanda, did you get up this morning? Well, yes, ma'am, write that down. Amanda, are you breathing? Well, yes, ma'am, write that down. Amanda, are you in prison today? No, ma'am, write that down. Amanda, are you dead? No, ma'am, write that down. Amanda, did you sleep in a bed last night instead of a gutter or a street? Yes, ma'am, write that down. Amanda, are you wearing clothes this morning? Yes, ma'am, write that down. So this morning I stand before you this morning overwhelmed with gratitude. I'm so grateful that God laid my name on somebody's heart for me to get to come this weekend. I'm so grateful that we get to be in this beautiful Westin Hotel. I'm so grateful for GPS that led me here, even though I had to drive around the building 30 minutes because GPS could not. It's right there, I see it. I'm so grateful for whoever invented GPS. I'm so grateful that we have electricity. We've got these beautiful lights to sit under this morning. I'm so grateful for electricity and being able to have a microphone. Not that I would need it, I assure you. But it's here for your benefit. I'm so grateful for Mike, for our tapers, for our historians, because they are the keepers of our history. That's where the storytellers are. They're keeping our stories alive so that I can hear that experience, strength, and hope. I'm grateful I had that beautiful hotel bed to sleep in last night on a Saturday night and not in a gutter and not in a street. I'm so grateful that I woke up this morning in bed by myself. That wasn't always the case. I'm so grateful I got to wake up this morning, that beautiful window and the sun shining in, and me being able to appreciate that sun shining in and not, oh my God, I got to do this again. Oh my God, I got to do this again. I'm so grateful I have snacks and food in my room. I'm so grateful that I had a desire this morning to take a shower and brush my teeth. That wasn't always a priority on my list. I'm so grateful today that I stand before you today and hopefully wearing my sobriety in this beautiful dress. Wearing underwear. That was not always a priority. I'm so grateful that I've got to meet you. I'm so grateful that you let me hug you and let me pour the love I have in me into you. Maybe just a little bit. Let you feel my little sponsor, Miss Peggy, used to always say, love is the power. I want you to feel that. And I want you to know that I wish I had a picture of what I looked like when I came in. Because I promise you, I am a woman transformed only by the grace of God, by God in AA, by the spiritual program of action as outlined in this book. I have worked my butt off. I wasn't suggested anything. I was told what to do, and I did it because I didn't want to die. I didn't want to die. I will share with you a little bit about what my life was like and what I was like growing up. I grew up in a small town in Alabama, Andalusia, Alabama. I lived in the country. I'm an only child. I was the first grandchild and the first great-grandchild. My world did revolve around me. To say that I was selfish and self-centered is an understatement. And then when I'm thinking about how did I get a relationship with a higher power, when I think about what did I know of God back then, I don't know that I really knew in my early childhood a lot about God. My mother didn't take me to church. My grandmother, my meemaw, my peepaw didn't take me to church. Some of my first memories about having any kind of idea was my big mama, my great-grandmother. And she was Church of Christ, and we would go to that Church of Christ church, and they would be singing in shape notes. And I learned how to sing shape notes, and I remember her always having Juicy Fruit gum in her purse. And those are my first ideas. I will tell you, as a child, my very first memory was not a pleasant memory. And I know that I grew up angry with resentments, and I didn't even know what those were. 5 years old, I'm on the playground, and kids are talking about what their parents do. And I would say, well, I don't have a daddy, because that was just easier to say than the truth. My mother had to leave my real father when she was 6 months pregnant with me. He was a druggie, an alcoholic, a hell's angel, and he took a shotgun to her one day and was going to kill her. When she was 6 months pregnant with me, he was very violent, and she had to leave. So she called my peepaw, and peepaw went to Mississippi and rescued her and brought her back to Andalusia. So it was just easier to say, I don't have a daddy. My next resentment was when I was 8 years old and I got diagnosed with my hearing loss. They put us in the library and they put the little headphones on you, and you had to raise your hand when you hear the beeps, and I never heard a beep. I never raised my hand. They put me on the special ed list. I had to sit in front of my classroom. I was on that special ed list all the way through high school. I had to sit in the front of the classroom in every single class that I had the rest of my school life. It made me different. Juniors and thirdies, I had to go over here to this little room with a speech therapist because I couldn't say my W's and my R's. I still get tongue-tied sometimes when I start talking really fast. I was already different. By the time I was 8 years old, my mother had been married and divorced 4 times, twice to the same man. I was 8 years old, and my mother gave me a choice. She said, Amanda, I'm going to go back to school and better myself. And I'm going to move to Birmingham, 4 hours north. And you have a choice. You can go live with me, or you can stay here in Andalusia with me, Ma and Peepaw. Oh, my God, are you kidding me? I didn't know what that would look like when I went off with her. We lived in some hellacious places. I remember 10 shacks, literally. Orange 70s shag carpet. I remember having to... We would race when we'd open the door because when you flip on the light, you'd have to jump on a piece of furniture because the rats would be crawling across the room. I remember living in a place that was so nasty, I would lay my head down at night and roaches would be running across the windowsill at my head. I did not know what it would look like if I went with her. So as an 8-year-old child, I made a decision to stay with my grandparents there in Andalusia to a life that I knew. I had cousins that lived across the street with my Aunt Opal, my Uncle Cecil. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I knew that I had a big family. I knew that when they all got together, they all started drinking, and we all started telling stories, and they all started having a good time. I knew my favorite uncle was Uncle MC, and he would be having some drinks, and he would get some red, rosy cheeks and start telling these wonderful stories, and I would laugh. And my favorite aunt, my Aunt Mutt, she would start drinking and get these red, rosy cheeks and start telling stories, and I would laugh, and I wanted to be a storyteller like them. That's all I knew, that it was a social thing. My peepaw is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army, and I grew up in that house knowing that children would be seen and not heard. I knew how to answer the phone. Lieutenant Colonel Rayleigh's residence, this is Amanda speaking, how may I help you? I knew when you went out to dinner how to use the silverware at that table. I knew how to be a lady. I knew to smile even when I didn't want to smile. I knew that when people asked you how are you doing today, you say okay, even when it's not. Now I'm going to skip ahead to the age of 12. I heard a speaker say one time, if we could keep people from turning 12 and being raised in Southern Baptist churches, we'd have a lot fewer alcoholics. That certainly was true in my case. Now, I had started attending the First Baptist Church there in Andalusia, and my family did not go with me, but that was where a lot of the kids at school went, and so I started attending church there off and on, and it was getting an idea about a God. So three things happened the year that I turned 12. The first thing that happened was the day that I learned how to lie. Now, I was a very busy child. I know looking back that I was overachieving and doing everything that I could not to be in that home. Because, you see, my experience living with me, Mom, and Peepaw was they would argue a lot, right? So, and I would wake up in the middle of the night and want a glass of water, and I'd go out in the hallway, and Meemaw's standing there in her bra and her girdle and all that, and Peepaw's in his white tank top and boxer shorts, and they're going at it in the hallway, okay? And that put a lot of fear in me. Well, on this particular day, my schedule would be I would leave school, change clothes in Meemaw's car, and either go to band practice or go to dancing or go to choir. I mean, I was gone. I was busy. So on this particular day, Meemaw and I got our signals confused. And so I'm at the front of the school thinking she's going to pick me up there, and I had no idea where she was. Now, I will say this was back in the day where you did not dare call DHR. There was no Child Protective Services. There was no 911. When you got in trouble, you got your butt whooped. And what that would look like in my house is Meemaw would have me go out and pick a rose switch off the rose bush, right? And if it didn't have enough to it, Meemaw would have to go pick the switch, and God help you if Meemaw had to pick the switch, right? So I'm sitting here for 2.5 hours not knowing where my Meemaw is, but I know when she finds me, it is not going to be pretty. Oh, my God. Sure enough, when she found me, she took me home, and she gave me the worst whipping of my life that day. She whipped me so hard I had blood running down my legs. Now, I called my mother that night and told her what Meemaw had done. And my mother drove the 4 hours from Birmingham to Andalusia, and she told my Meemaw, she said, you will not ever lay a hand on my child ever again. Now, I will tell you that Meemaw kept that promise, but there were many times in my young life where I wish she would just beat me, because withholding love from a child and having that kind of scorn toward a child was so much worse. That day I learned to CYA. That day I learned to lie. I was never going to get beat like that ever again in my life. And I began to practice that, and I became very good at it. I began to lie when I didn't have to. I became a master at that manipulative tool. Second thing that happened that year. Like I said, Meemaw and Peepaw argued a lot at night, and that put a lot of fear in me because I had watched different scenarios with my mother in my young life, and I didn't like that. I didn't like them arguing, and one of my favorite places to be in the world was on our pond with my Peepaw fishing. God, I love being out there with him. So one day we're out there on the pond and we're fishing, and somehow Peepaw and I got to start talking about him and Meemaw arguing. So we're talking about that, and I said, you know, Peepaw, you don't have to live like that. Why don't you just get a divorce? Mama does it all the time. few months later, I come home from school and I go in the house, and I was raised in such a way where I could walk in a room and know when something was wrong. I could walk in a room and know something's up. I look at my grandmother, my meemaw, and she's over there and she's been crying, and I had never seen meemaw cry before. Peepaw's at the head of the table, and I'm looking at him, and his cheeks are red and his eyes are red, and I had never seen Peepaw cry before, but he had been crying. And Peepaw said, "Come here, Amanda, come sit right here." And he patted his lap. And I went over there and sat in my favorite place in the world, and I sat on my Peepaw's lap. And he says, "Amanda, do you remember the conversation we were having one day out there on the pond? And we were fishing, and we were talking about me and Meemaw arguing." And I said, "Well, yes, sir." And he said, "Well, do you remember what she said?" And I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Why don't you get a divorce?" And he said, "Well, we are." So in my 12-year-old mind, it was all my fault. "Amanda, why in the world did you say that? Good God, why did you say that?" "Because you said that out loud. Meemaw and Peepaw are going to get a divorce. Where are you going to go? This is your home. This is your safe place. Oh, my God, look what you've done. Oh, my God. What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to Meemaw? What is this going to look like? Oh, it's all my fault." Now, the reality of that situation was, he had started having an affair with Meemaw's married best friend, who divorced her husband, married my Peepaw, and they built a house across the pond that my Meemaw could see out her kitchen window the rest of her life. But at that time, it was all my fault. Third thing that happened that year, my mother had always told me that when I was 12 years old, if I wanted to find my real father, that she would help me. I had one picture of my real father. It was them on their wedding day. There's my mother in that beautiful white dress, and there's my father. He's really tall and skinny. They called him Slim. He's 6'5". He had a military haircut, really cropped short, one green eye, one blue eye, handsome man. And that's the one picture I had of my father. Well, you know, I'm looking at my life at age 12, and I'm like, and you know, this just isn't really going so hot. Maybe if I find my daddy, he can take me away from all this. You know, grass is greener. Maybe he lives somewhere exotic like California. And he can get me out of here. Maybe he's rich. Oh, my God, yes. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Oh, yes, Mama, let's start hunting up my real daddy. I want to meet my real daddy. So my mother starts making phone calls, and she calls up Grandma. And lo and behold, he's living in her basement. That should have been clue number one right there. So my mother, me, and my favorite aunt, my aunt, we traipsed up to Spring Hill, Tennessee, which is where they were living, their home place. And we get there a little bit after lunch one day, and we knock on the door, and my grandmother answers the door, and my grandpa answers the door, and I'm having an experience because, you know, in the little town of Andalusia, everybody looks like us, talk like us. We all go to the American Legion on Friday night and play bingo. We all go to the American Legion on Saturday night and dance. Everybody goes, there's one school, there's only two churches. You're either Baptist or Methodist. I mean, everybody was the same, right? So I'm having some significant experiences sitting in the front of this house, and all of a sudden I hear a sound I'd never heard before. Holly, 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 holly. I look out the front window, and the best way I know to describe it is there is a woolly booger sitting on a motorcycle. I'd never heard a motorcycle before. That was the sound of a Harley coming up the driveway. The woolly booger gets off the motorcycle and starts walking into the house. Now, it's got a beard down past its belly. It's got hair down to its butt. It is covered in tattoos, and this one says F off. And I had never even heard that, let alone seen it in ink on somebody's body. And it comes in the front room, and it says, "Well, aren't you going to hug your old man?" No, no. That was the other half of me. The grass was not greener, and I needed a drink. It wasn't long after that experience that I did take my first conscious drink of alcohol. And I say conscious drink because I had alcohol before. My family was social drinkers, and when we got all together, the alcohol did break out. And I will tell you, my granddaddy made the best scuffling wine on God's green earth. And at Christmas and Thanksgiving and holidays, when we would go over there, we would all get a little, really it was a detergent glass, those old green detergent glasses they used to have. Oh, my mama would pour me one of them, and I would take that thing back, and it was sweet, and I would say, "Mama, please, can I have some more?" But it wasn't long after this experience that I had my first conscious drink. My guy best friend, his daddy had a house down there in Panama City. A bunch of us go down there one weekend, and the daddy starts walking around and taking everybody's drink orders. Well, my best friend, Tim, he ordered a 6-pack of peach wine coolers. Well, I said, you know what? That sounds pretty good to me. I think I'll have that too. So the daddy goes off wherever he goes and he comes back and we've all got our drinks. I proceed to drink every last one of that six pack of peach wine coolers and blacked out. And had the experience that alcohol immediately could do for me what I could not do for myself. See, I was one of those kids, I would lay in bed at night and I'm worrying about Mama and who's she going to marry next and what's that going to look like and is she ever coming back home and I've destroyed me, Ma, and Peepaw's marriage and oh my God, what's going to happen to me, Ma, and it's all my fault and what's going to... All the voices and I could not sleep at night and it was terrible and I was worrying all the time and I was full of fear. And when I drank that alcohol, it shut all those voices up. And I had the best night's sleep of my little life. God, yes. Oh. And my disease took off and went to the races. I don't know that I was an alcoholic drinker from that get-go. I will tell you that every time I drank after that, I was a blackout drinker. I only went with the friends that I knew I could drink alcohol in their house or I could steal it from their parents' liquor cabinet. I was stealing liquor out from under Meemaw's cabinet. It was really kind of funny because Mama at one time thought my Meemaw had a drinking problem. And she wanted to do an intervention. And she had been in there marking because I'm a Bacardi 151 girl. And I would steal Meemaw's Bacardi 151 under there. And so Mama had gone in there and had started marking the bottles, right? But what she didn't know was that I was stealing the Bacardi, right? I mean, I would be sitting there at the dinner table and I had poured out a 20-ounce Sprite bottle and I had filled that bad boy up with rum. And we're at the dinner table and they think I'm drinking Sprite and I'm already tying one on. So she's thinking Meemaw's drinking twice as much as she really was, you know. And my disease progressed, and I finished high school, and I went to the University of Alabama, and I went to college up there, and oh, my God, country girl come to town. Oh, my God, and I was in the million-dollar band. I mean, it was a party all the time. Thursday night was the Green Book practice party. Friday night was the party before the game. Saturday was the party after the game. We're either celebrating or commiserating. Either way, I'm getting drunk. Sunday was pro football. Somebody's watching some pro football somewhere, and my disease progressed. I mean, I started out drinking the people who I thought drank like me. I'm going to speed up here. February 19th, 1991 was a significant day in my life because that's the day that my big mama passed away. That great-grandmother that had taken me to that Church of Christ. And I will tell you, big mama was a rock in my life. She was that one somebody in my life that unconditionally loved me no matter what. It didn't matter if I made a C in school, which I made my first one the year that Peepaw and Meemaw got divorced, and I will never forget the look of disappointment on my Peepaw's face. Well, it didn't matter to Big Mama. She's going to make me some baked macaroni and cheese and sausage just like I love, whether I made a C or not. I remember thinking the day that she died, or we found out that she had died. I couldn't even drive to Andalusia. A friend had to drive me to Tuscaloosa, Andalusia. I don't remember anything about the funeral. I remember on the ride down there thinking to myself, you know, I've been going to that First Baptist Church. I've been doing things in the parking lot and drinking with those other kids that go to that church. We were drinking out there at the youth building. All a bunch of hypocrites. They don't really believe what they're saying. And I can just see Brother Foster standing up there with that Bible, slamming that Bible on that pew, telling me I was going to hell. That God was a vengeful God. And that God was mad at me for the things that I had been doing. Hell, fire, and brimstone. That to think it was a sin. Oh, and I had been doing so many things that I knew was a sin. I had been doing things that I knew my grandmother and grandfather did not raise me to do. Oh, my God, I'm going to hell. Let me see how fast I can get there. I don't remember much of the next 100 days. I had no contact with my mother and my grandmother. They didn't know if I was alive or dead. I do have about 4 memories of that time that I will share with you. I remember coming to, and I'm in a gray stairwell, and I am covered in vomit, puke, pee, poop. My head is hanging over a big black industrial garbage can, and I am disgusting. I remember coming to in one place and it's somebody's apartment house something and there's empties right here on the nightstand and I'm checking the empties to see if there's anything in there because I've got to have something in me and I'm looking around the room and I'm seeing what's on the floor and I'm checking all the empties and I'm going in the bathroom and I'm checking to see if there's Listerine, is there NyQuil, is there cough syrup, is there perfume, anything with an alcohol content. Then I'm going in the kitchen and I'm praying that there's real vanilla extract in there. because I got to get it in me. I remember coming to one night and it's just loud. It's just loud and there's all these noises and horns and lights and somebody's dragging me and they're dragging me and my back is scraping and somebody's pulling me and McFarland Boulevard is the busiest street in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and all of a sudden I have decided to lay down and take a nap in front of oncoming traffic, and my girlfriend is pulling me out of the major highway. The last memory I have then is I'm at a club, the Ivory Tusk, that used to be there, and that was a bar that we used to go to, and we would stand there and do that college dance, right, and I remember I had a cigarette in this hand, and I had a Miller Lite Long Neck in this hand, and I'm standing there, and I'm doing the college dance, and all of a sudden I crap all in my pants. And I take a puff, I take a swig, rock on. That, to me, is the look of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I was doing things that no good woman should be doing. I was doing what I had to do on a daily basis to get what I had to have on a daily basis. And I'm not going to go in a lot of detail on that. We know. As I was thinking about the relationship and how I began to build that relationship with my higher power, I was thinking about the night before, by the grace of God, something happened. And I was thinking about, you know, if there's anybody struggling with the power that they can believe in, I go back to the night before May 19th. I go back to that night when I knew something was wrong with me. I had tried all the methods it talked about on page 31. I had switched from liquor to beer. Beer was cheaper and I could get drunk faster on beer. I had tried going in paying for one drink and I would have that one drink and that craving would set in and I'm looking to the man next to me and I promise you I've got my drinks bought the rest of the night. The disease would take over. I will never forget the first time my sponsor called me a whore. We were doing a four-step, and my feelings were hurt. I'm not a whore. What are you talking about? She's like, Amanda, did you ever go out to dinner with a guy, and he bought your drinks and your dinner, and you slept with him after that? Well, sure. Amanda, did a man ever take you out to a movie or a dinner, and maybe he bought your drinks the rest of the night, and you slept with him after that? Well, absolutely. Honey, you was prostituting. You just wasn't getting paid cash in hand. That hurt my feelings. So when I think about that, I think about that night, the night before. What power am I screaming to for help? What power were you screaming to for help? We was calling something. I was screaming, God help me. God help me. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to stop this. Please help me. The next morning there was a knock at my door. My mother had been, and that's one of the reasons why I say by the grace of God, I'm sober today. God had been giving my mother nightmares about me. And her nightmare was she would come to the apartment, she would have the manager unlock the door, and she would walk in the apartment, and there was a terrible smell, and she would walk into the bedroom, and she would find me laying there naked, dead on the bed. And on this particular morning, she couldn't stand anymore, and she got her two best friends. They drove to Tuscaloosa, and they knocked on my door, and she said, Amanda, it's going to be okay. She had no idea. She just knew that she had not heard from me. She gave me a choice that day, and God gave me a moment of clarity where I chose to get help. We packed up everything in that apartment that day. We drove the 4 hours to Andalusia, got about 2 hours sleep, drove the 4 hours from Andalusia to Mobile, and that next morning, May 19th, I was in Providence Hospital in Mobile on the 10th floor on the psych unit there. I'm very grateful that I got to stay there for 60 days. In that treatment center, we've already heard, I got an education. Some of us have talked about that. A lot of things happened while I was in there. There were some issues that I got to work on while I was in there. I'm also a rape survivor. That was a really big traumatic experience for me. I got to work on that while I was in treatment. And I always want to say to anybody, if you've got some stuff going on, please, please get some help for that. Because I want to be free today. So I made the mistake one day of telling the psychiatrist that I might have drank a little bit. Unbeknownst to me, he was a recovering alcoholic and started sending my young butt to those AA meetings. I will tell you, I was 19 when I entered that treatment center. I had my 20th birthday when I was in that treatment center. That was a really big celebration because that was the day that I had made it to the level to where I could actually come down off the 10th floor, and they took us to Shoney's, and I had the strawberry cake there at Shoney's, and that was my 20th birthday, and I was so excited. So they started sending me to those AA meetings, and I didn't look like you. I was young. You were old. You were crusty. You were sleeping under bridges. You had drank out of brown paper bags. All these differences, right? I'm not like you. Don't touch me. Don't hug me. Stay away from me. And I would sit in the back of the room, and I would put my knees up, and I would put a barrier between me and you. And then one day at the Alano Club, a young lady got up there, and she told my story. She was young. She was blind. She was beautiful. She was clean. She was wearing a dress. She probably was wearing underwear. She began to talk about what she was like, and she had drank like me, and she had done things like me, and she had let go of all her morals like me, but now something had happened to her, and something had changed, and now she's up there, and she's a beautiful young woman, and she's talking about that she's an alcoholic. Well, if she's an alcoholic, am I an alcoholic? Could that be some hope for me? Am I an alcoholic? She's saying she's sober. She doesn't have to drink anymore. How did she do that? I want that. I don't have to die. I don't have to die. Because there were times I wanted to die. I was too scared to get a gun and shoot myself. I knew I couldn't shoot myself in the face. I knew my mother would want an open casket. Alcoholic thinking. I kid you not. I didn't want to take a bunch of pills because I hate to throw up. Good God, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it coming out in the nose. I hate it. Not that I didn't do it, but I hated it. I wanted to just die drinking. Let me just die drinking. But she gave me all this kind of hope, and that's the day that my ears opened up. And that's the day that I began to come into meetings and listen to the similarities and all the differences. And that's when things really started to change for me. I left that treatment center. I didn't know where I was going to go. I was facing 15 years in Tutwiler Prison. My mother showed up with a contract. I signed my name to the contract, went to Dothan to live with her. Got sober in a clubhouse, the Level Plains Wiregrass Clubhouse, right there between Dothan and Enterprise. I walked in that room that night, first meeting outside of treatment. I kid you not, there was over 300 years of sobriety in that room. I can still see everybody sitting right in their spot. You know you got a spot. You think you don't got a spot? Sit in somebody's spot. They'll tell you. So right over here on this side, there was an empty chair. And to the left of that empty chair was a little old lady with blonde hair and glasses. And that was Miss Peggy. And then there was an empty chair. And to the right of that chair was a little short lady with gold curly hair, blonde curly hair. And that was Gloria. And Miss Peggy said, "Here, honey, you come sit by me." And that was my sponsor to the right. That was my grand sponsor to the left. I didn't have to ask her to be my sponsor. Thank God I did not have to pick up a phone and call her to be my sponsor. I don't know where that came from. If you don't have a sponsee, have you asked somebody? Have you went and just grabbed somebody up and said, "Look, honey, here, let me help you"? Thank God I did not have to ask her. I don't know that I would have had the courage to do that. But I was willing to go to any lengths. And she told me, she said, "Honey," after that meeting, she told me something so important. She said, "You never have to take another drink of alcohol ever again if you don't want to. And we're going to try to help you not want to. And we're going to work this program." And she started taking me through the book and the doctor's opinion, where I learned that it wasn't just me being a bad person, that I have a disease. I have a spiritual malady. I have a mental obsession. I have a phenomenon of craving that is causing me to do these things. But here is a solution. If she'd have told me to stand on my head, I'd have done it. I'm not kidding. I was not suggesting anything. She literally told me what to do every day of my life until I could learn to do it on my own. My day would start like this. I would call her up. "I'm up." "Now what?" "Well, have you went in there and had anything to eat yet?" "No, ma'am." "Go eat. Call me back. Click." "All right, I ate. Now what?" "Well, have you had your shower yet?" "No, ma'am. Go take a shower. Call me back. Click." "All right, I took my shower. Did you brush your teeth?" "Well, no." "Well, go brush your teeth." Click. I would walk in a meeting and be dressed a certain way, and she would say, "Oh, no, ma'am, go back and try that again." Did y'all not catch that? Okay. Come in looking like a hoochie mama. "No, ma'am, you go back and try that again." She said, "Amanda, do you want to be a distraction? Do you want to be the reason why that boy next to you does not hear what he needs to hear that's going to save his life? No, ma'am, go put some clothes on." They told me I had to be self-supporting. I had 3 jobs in 2 counties and no car. I was doing everything that I had to do. And how I began to develop a relationship with the God of my experience. When we got to that second step, she had me doing exercise. She had me do an exercise, and she had me get a big yellow piece of paper. Okay? I love me some yellow legal pads. And I had to draw a line down the middle. And on the left side of that piece of paper, I wrote down what I thought God was. Okay? First thing I wrote down was Zeus. Like the mythical god with the gray silver hair. Zeus. Lightning bolts. She said, I want you to write down what you think God is. Vengeful. Hateful. Judgmental. Mean. Angry. All negative characteristics. That's the God that I had believed in up until that moment. So then she has me go over here to the right. She says, okay, man, on the right side of the page, I want you to write down what you would like for the God of your experience to be. What would you like for your higher power to look like? What are some of the qualities you would like for your higher power to have? Woo! Santa Claus! Happy, jolly, smiling, unconditional love, funny, sense of humor, loving, forgiving. Okay, now, she said, I want you to cut that paper in half. And I cut that paper in half. She said, I want you to tear up everything on that left side. I tore up everything on that left side. She said, now I want you to take that right side and I want you to hang that on your bathroom mirror, and that's the God I want you to begin praying to every day. First prayer I learned was a serenity prayer. And I would pray the serenity prayer, praying to that Santa Claus God, starting to have a relationship with that higher power. I had mentioned earlier this weekend that the three books I had when I got sober was the big book, the 12 and 12, and the little black 24-hour day book. That little black 24-hour day book helped me. It helped me have a relationship with something better than what I had been using. And that little book is full of stories and the four absolutes and how we can apply this to our daily life. And I began to live this sober lifestyle, and I began to see that I could be happy, joyous, and free. They started taking me to conferences all over the place, and I got to see you. God with skin on. Angels with skin on. And you were living happy, joyous, and free. My 21st birthday, I picked up my one-year medallion. My 21st belly button birthday. I picked up my one-year medallion in that clubhouse. Over 300 people in there. There's balloons. There's cake. We're having a ball. I never thought I would live to see 21. And here I am celebrating with all of you. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now, I will tell you, sobriety in early sobriety was not easy for me, and it does not say that it's going to be easy. It says it's a simple program. My sponsor had told me, said, look, Aunt Amanda, it's like this. If you have cancer and they tell you down at the CVS tomorrow that they're going to be giving out little blue pills that's going to cure your cancer, would you go get the little blue pill? Absolutely. I'm going to be the first one in line. I'm going to be camped out 3 days before because I'm getting the first little blue pill because that's just how I roll, right? Okay. She said, okay. You have the disease of alcoholism, and this is your little blue pill. This basic text, Alcoholics Anonymous, this spiritual program of action. And you've got to take it every day. And I try to take it every day. When I first started hearing about prayer and meditation, I really thought that I was going to have to learn how to sit in the lotus position and do my hands like this and go, and that just freaked me out. I didn't know that I could do that. What I learned through sobriety is that it doesn't necessarily have to look like that. And she asked me in the beginning, she said, Amanda, can you just take 5 minutes? Amanda, can you just take 10 minutes? And so I began to practice that. And I mentioned this weekend, you know, I didn't get struck sober and appear like I am today. It's been a lot of practice. Practice, 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 practice. Practice doing things different. Spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. I had a lot of experiences in sobriety. I do the steps every so often. Usually on average it's around every 18 months to 2 years because I want to keep growing. The book tells me I have to continue this for a lifetime. The book tells me that I have to continue seeking. Well, what does that look like? How can I continue to be a vessel for Him? I want to share a few quick stories. 3.5 years sober, I had had no relationship with my real father. After I had saw him when I was 12, I saw him just a few times during my high school years. He was not invited to my high school graduation. And God, the God of my experience, began to lay His name on my heart. And so one day I went up there to Tennessee, and it was the first time I had been up there that he had not been drinking or using. He was clean that day. And we walking around, they have a beautiful farm out there in Tennessee, and we come to this hillside, and it's just rolling hills, and all of a sudden, I'm having an out-of-body experience, kind of, because I can't believe the words that are coming out of my mouth, because I am telling this 6'5" man what I was like, what happened, and what my life is like now. I'm like, oh, my God. So I shared all that with him, and he's crying, and I'm crying, and we hug, and I tell him that I love him, and I'll see you later. And I leave. And it wasn't a few months later, he called up my mother, and he wanted to come to Dothan, and he wanted to get sober, and he went to treatment, and this August he'll have 24 years sober. That is a miracle. That is a miracle. That is amen. This man had tried to get sober. They would put him in jail and he would be puking up blood and going to DT so bad they'd have to send him to the hospital. He had to drink. He almost died 3 times. He was puking up blood the night that he rode to Dothan to go to my mama's house to go get sober. And now I have a wonderful relationship with my father. My children call him Pappy Slim. And I've had the wonderful experience the last few years of being able to be with him as he has walked through living with liver cancer. That is a miracle. That is a miracle. Now, that story is not about me. That story is about how the God of our experience can use us. And I want to share why I say the God of my experience. You know, and that happened to me probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I was meditating on God as we understand him. Okay? And it was in a time in my sobriety when some people were having some theological discussions. And I just didn't know how I felt about that. Don't be throwing your stuff on me. Thank you, I'm good, you know. And so that kind of stuff was happening. And so I began to think about God as I understand God. And what I came to realize that day is I will never understand God. Not only that, I don't want to put him in a box where I can understand him. Why in the world would I want to limit God to that? My God needs to be big. I will tell you that my God used to be out there in the Milky Way, out there in the stars, floating around somewhere. I don't want that. I don't want that. I will tell you right this minute, I feel the presence of my Creator right here with me in this moment. I have felt it all morning. I felt it all weekend. Right here, right here, right here, right here, right here, right here. I am surrounded. I will never understand God. I can't fathom all that He does or how He does things or why He does things. And I will never understand that. So how do I know that God is real? My experiences. I can share with you experience after experience after experience. Some of my favorite times with my Creator are walking on the beach. And I'll get out there before sunrise, and I'm walking up and down the beach, and I'm talking to that spirit, and I will tell you about one of my favorite journal writings that ever happened. I was walking up and down the beach one morning, and I used to be a shell snob, right? I only got the perfect ones, right? And they had to look a certain way, right? This particular morning, I'm walking up and down the beach, and I'm looking at the shells, and I'm realizing that I'm attracted to the ones with holes in them. And I'm picking this one up, and it's got a crack in it. And I'm picking up this one, and it's not a whole shell. And I'm like, well, God, why in the world am I picking these up? And it says, because I love them just the same. And what I realized is the God of my experience loves us, broken, used, whatever shape we come to. I can share experiences where I've been talking. I'll show you this. I still can't get over this one. I was in Maine. Sugarloaf, Maine up there, and it had been a wonderful spiritual experience and was having a wonderful weekend, and I'm standing up there, and I really do. I pee and I pray, and God does the rest, and so I began to have that same kind of experience I had with Slim that day where I just kind of, oh, my God, what's coming out of my mouth? Because it was stuff that I had never even heard before, and where is this coming from? And I began to talk about how we are all rocks being thrown in a pond. And that was before Sandy Beach wrote all that. And how, really, it really was. And how those ripple effects go, and you never know how far your ripple effects go and how wide that is, but we are all important. You know, whether we're sharing in a meeting and somebody hears it, whether we're working one-on-one with a sponsee and somebody hears it, whether you're playing a CD in a car, you never know where those ripple effects go, right? And I'm like, God, what in the world am I saying this for, right? So after the meeting and we're shaking hands and we're thanking people, and this woman comes up and she has obviously been ugly crying. I mean, snot, mascara, and I'm going to hug her. I mean, you know, I'm, oh my God, honey. And she's of a certain age, and her older mother was there with her. And so she begins to tell me why she's ugly crying. She said, I want you to know, I've been trying to get sober, and I haven't been able to get sober. Now, all this is, I want you to know. Okay. I want you to know I've been trying to get sober, and I haven't been able to get sober. And my mother's really been trying to help me, but I've been really struggling. I've been really struggling with the God concept. And so my mother wanted me to come here this weekend, and I didn't want to come. And she said, well, we're going. We're going to go hear this girl from Alabama. She said, so I told my mother, well, I just don't want to go. I don't believe in God. And the mama said, well, we're going. And so the daughter said, okay. She had been pulling out some stuff that day and had pulled out her annual. And she said, I tell you what, mama, if you think God is real, and if God is real, then he's going to mention this right here. She opened up the page of that annual. And one of her friends had written the year that she had graduated high school, Bethany, don't ever forget, you're like a rock being thrown in a pond, and you never know how far your ripple effects are going to go. That's not me. That's not me. That's the God of my experience. And I have experience after experience after experience like that. I have stories that I can tell you. All of a sudden I'm sitting there and I'm working with a girl in a room full of people, and it's like this bubble just goes around us, and it is me and her in spirit. God of my experience. I will never understand God. I have a friend that talks about go where you feel that. Go where you feel that presence, and go there often. I have really taken that to heart. I've tried to see, okay, where can I feel that power? Where can I feel spirit? Where can I feel the creator of the universe? Where can I feel that power that I believe in? Sometimes I believe it in meetings. I'm feeling it right now in this room. Sometimes I believe it out in nature. I love taking hikes, and I love being able to appreciate those hikes and seeing what's coming, and oh, look at the mushroom and look at the flower, and it sounds cheesy, but for me that really is a place where I can feel that. I feel it at the beach. I feel that power with those waves rolling in, and there's nothing but sky. Oh my God, I feel that. There's a Catholic adoration chapel that I go to on Monday nights, and we sit there for an hour and we pray, and I have a rosary and I pray the rosary. I have had significant spiritual experiences in that chapel. I have had experiences in a Baptist church. I've had experiences in a Pentecostal church. I am not afraid to raise my hands, let the Holy Spirit fall. Come on. Whatever floats your boat. Whatever floats your boat. Whether it's, if it's Buddha, go to it. When I was going back and forth, it's an 8-hour drive one way to Tampa, Florida, where my daddy lives. And all of that year, it was really bad. All of that year, every week, I was going down to Tampa, Florida. And I kept noticing this garden over here. And one trip back, I couldn't stand it, and I had to stop. And it's a house with this garden and statues and stuff. And I go up to the front door, and I knock on the door, and this little dude he was a Buddhist monk. Answers the door, and I'm like, what is this place? And it's a monastery that somebody had left there. And so we prayed for a minute, and I go out and I walk in this Buddhist garden. I had significant spiritual that garden appeared for me so that I could have a break between home and Tampa. God does for me what I can't do for myself. So I encourage you to get out there and find some experiences. I have Native American ancestry. I have Native American practices that I do. I just went to Sedona 2 years ago, and it changed my life. So I encourage you, go, go, go where you can have these kind of experiences. Let it be real to you. I don't have to argue with anybody about theology. I do not care whether you're Catholic or Jewish or Buddhist or whatever that is, whatever floats your boat, but give it a name. Call out to it so that it knows you're talking to it, because let me tell you, the God of my experience is a gentleman. I have to invite him in. And if I haven't invited him in, I am in self-will. I shared the other day about putting everything in the third step prayer. I really do that. I practice that. And I assure you, if you do that, you will have some experiences. When I tell somebody I'm working with, put something in the third step prayer, do it for 21 days, I have yet to see one of them have to go all 21 days before God has already done for them what they can't do for themselves, and it's resolved. See, when the big book talks about solve all our problems, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's just going to strike down and solve the problem. Okay? Just because you need money doesn't mean he's just going to whoop, drop $1 million out of the sky. Now, not that he can't, because I've seen that too. But my experience is that the God of my experience may change something. He may change my perspective. He may change the situation, and the problem disappears. The prayers in this book are therefore a reason. They are our tools. Third step prayer, seventh step prayer, 11th step prayer. Get in there. Pray them. They work. Who knew? Really, who knew? My first spiritual experience was doing my first fifth step with my sponsor on the back porch of that clubhouse. I will never forget it as long as I live. I will never forget that unconditional love that I felt from her. As her tears hit my head, I had told this woman everything, everything. And she loved me. And she hugged me. And she let me feel that unconditional love. I will tell you, my relationship with my higher power has changed through the years of my sobriety. The way I pray and meditate today has changed through my sobriety. I really did used to think that we'd have to sit in the lotus position and do that. And what I have learned is that's not necessary. You meditate every day of your life, but you may not realize it. If you're worrying, you're meditating. You're meditating on the negative. So my sponsor taught me to practice the positive opposite, so that's why I'm grateful. Can I be grateful in any circumstance? Can I be grateful at all times? Can I be thankful at all times? I will share with you, I just touched on it a little bit, and I really don't want to talk about this. I have been arguing with God all weekend about this. I'm going to do it. Just give me a second. I shared briefly the other day about we have just coming out of an experience where my daughter is a runner, and her male coach put his hands on her in anger. And she was not to blame, and I was not to blame, and that is justified anger. But the book tells me that I can't have justified anger, that I will get drunk. And I don't want to get drunk. So it's been I really had to work on, can I be thankful in this situation? Can I turn this SOB over to the God of my experience? Can I not hurt him? Can I not cause harm? Because I was not kidding. The knife was in the van. And he'd have never known what hit him. But my next thought was, I don't want to go to jail. And I don't want my child to see me act that way. And I don't want to have to make an amend. Every meeting that I had ever been to, everything that I had ever been told by my sponsor, every prayer I had ever said, saved me that day. Because there is nothing like Mama Bear. I have been able to be thankful. I have been able to be grateful. Because some of what this experience has shown me is how tough my daughter's going to be. One of my fears for her was, without even realizing until all this happened, was that, you know, I'm a tough old bird. Because of the way I grew up. Because I had all of those survival skills. Because of the situations in my life, I had to get tough. I had to develop survival skills. My children do not have this experience. I met my husband when I was a year sober. We've been together ever since. They have a stable home. They've never seen their family drink. They've never seen anybody drink. They've certainly never seen their mother drink. We practice program in our house. My kids speak program. They may not know that's what it is, but they speak program all the time. Mom, I think you need to call your sponsor. Mama, you might need to do a four-step on that. And when they're back there fighting, Mama, your name ain't in there. It's just between me and Kip. So one of the things I have discovered through this situation is that she is tough. She is strong. She is filled with a light that I don't even think that she knew she possessed. She has been a young lady of dignity and grace through this whole process. She has had no desire to cause harm. She has been absolutely amazing for me. She has been a wonderful example for me. I owe her to do no less. So I have tried really hard to be a woman of dignity and grace throughout this situation. I have been thankful because God has allowed me to see that. I've been able to see in the last few weeks how God is doing for her what she can't do for myself, because this has really put us in a tizzy. This has been a year-long thing. This happened last Christmas. Last January. Anyway, somewhere in there. This has been a year-long thing, and so she didn't know if she was going to run or not this fall. And she has really struggled with that this summer, and we prayed together about that, and I've encouraged her to talk to the God of her experience about that and see what God says. And I don't believe that God does things to us, but I do believe that God can make good come out of any situation. She had been sick with a respiratory virus for over a month. She's coming off a hamstring injury. So when she got cleared from PT from the hamstring injury, she got sick. Well, then she kept being sick. There was a terrible respiratory virus going around Montgomery. 3 antibiotics later, okay, they finally had to put her on Levaquin. After they put her on the Levaquin, she goes to the lake to spend with her best friend and their family. She has a bicycle accident, cuts her knee to the bone. She can't run for 3 weeks. Well, they have finished their summer program, and they've got to meet in 3 weeks. She's not able to run as fast as she wants to run for that. And so she was able to make some decisions. I was able to share with her, honey, God may be doing for you what you can't do for yourself. Maybe it's not meant for you to run this fall. She wants to be a vet. She's been interning with a vet for 2 years. After school, she's going to be interning with a vet. On Saturdays, she's going to be interning with a vet instead of running at a track meet or a cross-country meet. We made a contact this week with a friend in AA whose sister-in-law is the pharmacist at the vet school for the vets at Auburn, where she wants to go to college, and they're going to take her over there to some games where she can meet the faculty. Well, see, none of that would have been possible. None of that would have been possible if she had been running this fall. I had to turn that situation over. I had to put that in the third-step prayer. I had to put that man in the third-step prayer. I had to put my daughter in the third-step prayer. Daily, daily, daily. Every time they came to man. You know, when I'm doing the fourth and the fifth step, and I had that first significant spiritual experience with my sponsor, and then when I made my amends, I was getting evidence that God existed. I was getting evidence through these experiences that this was real. I can feel it. I can see it. I can touch it. A lot of my girls today have evidence journals. When we're talking on the phone and all of a sudden God has done something for them, and I said, you need to write that down. Well, why? Because you're going to have a bad day one day, and you're going to need to look back on this and see that God was there for you. You're going to need a reminder. You need some evidence. Go write that down. I have an evidence journal. I have story after story after story where God showed up for me. I'm sure you can do the same. My prayer and meditation time looks very much different now. I'm excited to get up in the morning. I usually get up about 6 or 6:30. I have a little prayer and meditation room. We just switched rooms in the house, and I have a big window right there, and I can see outside, and I have a little candle that I light. I like white candles that smell good. I highly recommend Chip and Joanna Gaines Magnolia Farm, their sugar birch candle. They are the bomb. I have a eucalyptus and mint one up in my room right now. I've been burning all weekend. And I light that candle and I invite the God of my experience in. Remember, he's a gentleman. I have to invite him in. I ask him to lead me, guide me, direct me, show me. I say some prayers. I have some books that I read. One of them is Still, that 24-hour day book. That's the first one I read every day of my life. Much like the big book, there's always something new in there. Every time I read the book, there's something new in here. I'm like, when did they put that in there? You know, they sneak it in on you. I know it's all in black ink, but that was not there the last time I read that, right? And then I ask God, God, what are you up to today and how can I be a part of it? If I have a to-do list, I'll pray over that to-do list. Today I'm okay with not getting everything done. I have some music I listen to sometimes. Sometimes I get my praise and worship on. Casting Crowns, Carrie Job, whatever. Whatever floats your boat. And get ready for my day. And I go out and try to help God's kids. I try, you know, I continue to do the steps. I have a new sponsor. I will share with you my sponsor, Miss Peggy, died. She's been gone a year now. That was a little bit of a rough year for me. 4 days after she died, I did get somebody else that I used for that year. She did not live near me. We knew that. And she said, look, if you find somebody near you, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay because she's healthy, right? And so I found somebody close to me. And so we're going through this book and we're using the big book and going back through the steps and I'm seeing things that I've never seen before. And I'm growing closer to my Creator. If I'm not growing, I am regressing. I believe that. I believe that. If I'm not going forward, I'm going backward. I believe that. I have one last thing I wanna share before I close. I hope that at least one person in this room has heard something that they can take home with them. I hope that at least one person in this room has heard something that has helped them in some way. I strive to continue to grow. I hope that I continue this for a lifetime. I want to continue to peel the layers of my onion to be the woman of dignity and grace that the God of my experience would have me be. I hope that you will leave here and go have some experiences. And when you have those experiences, share them. Share them. I want to hear them. The people around you want to hear them. I want to know that you're still growing and glowing. I want to know how you're using that power to get through what you're going through today. Again, back to the miracles. We are all miracles sitting in this room. And my sponsor used to always talk about that we are the chosen ones. So the God of my experience instructed me to close with something different today. Normally, I close with the last paragraph on page 164. But today, He has instructed me to close with this. It's the poem, Why We Were Chosen. God in His wisdom has selected this group of men and women to be the purveyors of His goodness. In selecting them, through whom to bring about this phenomenon, He went not to the proud, the mighty, the famous, or the brilliant. He went to the humble, to the sick, to the unfortunate. He went to the drunkard, the so-called weakling of the world. Well might He have said to us, into your weak and feeble hands I have entrusted a power beyond estimate. To you has been given that which had been denied the most learned of your fellows. Not to scientists or statesmen, not to wives or mothers, not even to my priests or ministers have I given this gift of healing other alcoholics, which I entrust to you. It must be used unselfishly. It carries with it grave responsibility. No day can be too long. No demands upon your time can be too urgent. No case too pitiable. No task too hard. No effort too great. It must be used with tolerance, for I have restricted its application to no race, no creed, and no denomination. Personal criticism, you must expect. Lack of appreciation will be common. Ridicule will be your lot. Your motives will be misjudged. Success will not always attend your efforts in your work with other alcoholics. You must be prepared for adversity. For what men call adversity is the ladder you must use to ascend the rungs toward spiritual perfection. And remember, in the exercise of this power, I shall not exact of you beyond your capabilities. You are not selected because of exceptional talents. And be careful always, if success does attend your efforts, not to ascribe to personal superiority, that to which you can lay claim only by virtue of my gift. If I had wanted learned men to accomplish this mission, the power would have been entrusted to the physician and the scientist. If I had wanted eloquent men, there would have been many anxious for the assignment. For talk is the easiest used of all talents with which I have endowed mankind. If I had wanted scholarly men, the world is filled with better qualified men than you who would have been available. You were selected because you have been the outcast of the world. And your long experience as drunkards has made, or should make you, humbly alert to the cries of distress that come from the lonely hearts of alcoholics everywhere. Keep ever in mind the admission you have made on the day of your entrance into AA, namely, that you are powerless and that it was only with your willingness to turn your will and your life into my keeping that relief came to you. My name is Amanda Brown. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Thank you for letting me share.